Well, hello and welcome to another episode of the 55 East Revelations podcast. This episode comes directly from sunny Dubai, the city that sits on the 55th parallel and the inspiration for the name of the 55 East Revelations podcast. And today I'm going to be answering questions that I usually ask my guests about myself and how I got started in the world of investments, economics and money. So without further ado, let's get right into it. Why 55 East Revelations and how did it come about? Well, it didn't start out like that, but a few years ago, after doing particularly well in the stock market, I was asked how I managed to make money successfully in the markets. I gave it some thought and how best to go about getting the message across, and instead of explaining it to one person, I thought it might be better to write a small how-to book, as I believe that would be one of the best ways of firstly crystallizing my knowledge and secondly, passing on the experience with real-world examples, including the emotional and mental side to investing. And in any case, the truth is, for me, winning in the market didn't happen until after many years, and after quite a few losses and failures. I'm pleased to say the book has sold well, and that many of my friends and acquaintances who bought it also found it useful. And not only that, from a personal perspective, I actually enjoyed writing it as well. So naturally, as time goes on, that leads to thinking about other ideas of how I can help others in the trading and investment world. And so the 55 East Revelations podcast was created. I wanted to speak to some of the best investors and traders in the world. Those that understand how markets work, those that know how to profit from markets and understand the economics, the concepts of money, all these factors that uphold our economic system. So if anyone's listening that would like to be part of my show, anyone that has a track record of success in the financial markets, please don't hesitate to reach out to me, and that's on my 55 East email. And why did I choose the name 55 East Revelations? Well, because it's the 55th parallel, the Middle Eastern region, where I spent a formative period in my adult life, and after which I also named my money transfer company 55 East FX. How did I get started in the markets? Well, like many, I was called to the endeavour because I was fascinated by the markets from a young age. And as a career, I began as a money markets broker with great hopes to be a trader, especially in a bank, because that was normally where the money was, the big money, as well as the prestige of the position. Only it didn't happen that way. For me, there was quite a long journey of investing failure and having to concentrate on my day job to make money for the family. And to be honest, at that time, it was just as well, because a broker's life was one of entertaining clients and also earning some decent money. In that regard, it was better for me to keep it rather than lose it in the markets, especially as I didn't really have a consistent plan. For me, trading and investing was more of a whichever way the wind blows kind of style. And that really doesn't have any longevity. So let me tell you about my book, Investing on the Shoulders of Giants, and what it means for me. A few years ago, I wrote about my experiences in the markets, and in particular with a view to passing on that knowledge and experience that worked for me. And it was worked in particular during 1 year of 2016, where I managed to get over 100% returns on my money. And although that was to be repeated the following year, 2017, I didn't feel the need to write about the experience of 2017, because most of the information that was in the original book, that sort of covers the theory of everything that's essential to investing from my perspective and all the practical aspects. And I named it Investing on the Shoulders of Giants because that's effectively what I was doing. I was using the tried and tested methods of other successful investors for my own benefit. Only I had all these other experiences to add into the mix. And I guess that kind of made it my own style. And I think investors, they tend to look for broadly similar attributes for their investments. The when to buy and the when to sell, how much and what kind of diversification is necessary. How can you sleep at night? How do you judge risk? And what is the mental side to it? Do you have the strength of mind to keep calm? The book has been accused of being somewhat simplistic in its message, and how would I view that criticism? Well, it is fair, and I suppose the whole ethos of the book was to make it as accessible and understandable to as many interested investors as possible by being as simple and to the point, but not losing the essential message. And I think that's what Einstein also alluded to. Keep it simple as possible, but don't lose the essence. And from a broking perspective, that's what we used to do on a daily basis. You know, we had to be direct with information, keep it short, to the point, get a message across. And I think that probably comes through in the book. And how long did it take to write? Well, 6 months, pretty much. 6 months to write, on and off. 3 months to publish it myself, so all in a total of 9 to 10 months. And to be honest, I laugh because I couldn't believe it took so long to publish. For me, I thought self-publishing was going to be easy, but to be honest, to the uninitiated, it was still very challenging and at times frustrating because you don't always know what you're doing, which is why it's probably best in some regards to pay, well, not an expert, but someone at least that's gone through the process. Anyway, I got there in the end. And also, as I wasn't working anymore as a broker at the time, it was easier for me to focus on it. What topics do I cover in the book, and why did I focus on them? Well, we start with the basics. Market conditions, those are probably the most essential and important to start off with, as without those it's very difficult to pick any winning stocks, in my opinion. We then go on to discuss capital preservation, risk, diversification, assets and earnings, the impact of debt, volatility, drawdowns or losses while waiting for winners, compounding, the emotional impact of investing on the psyche, and a footnote of when I had a very bizarre dream about a stock I'd never even heard of, yet 3 days later I was invested in it and it made me 6 times my money. So that's something I can't account for, but it makes for a very good story, I think. So effectively, these are the topics that I consider to be the most important building blocks, if you like, upon which everybody can really rely on in the investing process, and that's why they're in the book. And in order to make an investment book more in the real world, I decided to draw from my own thought processes during that 2016 period, and hopefully some of that experience comes through to the readers, even though at times it probably does seem to be a little bit dramatic. In truth, investing doesn't have to be dramatic, but ask any trader or investor who's been around and you'll note that it's mostly about keeping your mind in order. Generally speaking, the less drama, the better. So what do I look for in good trades and investments? Well, like most investors, I want to find value, and every single investor will tell you that's what they're also looking for. Only we all tend to go about it in slightly different ways. And like I said, there are certain attributes that begin to set off flags of interest for me when I read about a stock or a company. If I get more interested as it starts to pass certain tests I have, then I start to do even more research and keep the process going. The information I read about the stock needs to be clear and easily understood from the accounts, as I don't really like to have to decipher unnecessarily complicated information from these reports and accounts. I didn't take accountancy as an option, and I don't hold any of the higher qualifications such as the CFAs and the MBAs. And if people have those, they're certainly at an advantage. When it comes to the accounts, I look for value, trying to see what the net value is and translate that into the current stock price so I can get a good comparison as to whether a stock is fairly priced or inefficiently priced. I also look for the potential for improving earnings and whether there's been any catalyst that has triggered such a move. I like low or no debt on the books and ideally some easily to value assets, as well as a decent track record of performance over quite a few years. That is, for me, that's quite important. I need to see a good track record. In terms of the game plan, I do try and stick to my game plan, but sometimes I have to be a little bit flexible, and deviating from it every now and then obviously has to be done with a little bit of caution. But I think when that happens, it's only possible during an opportunity when you see that there could be a higher risk bet, but the reward will be way more than the amount that you put at risk. So in that regard, the hedge fund guys call these asymmetric bets, because the rewards are asymmetric to the risk. That is, the reward is potentially way higher than the amount that you could lose. So let's say you put down one and you could return 10. I like to listen to other portfolio managers that I respect, that have decent track records, and also that their logic makes sense to me. So I sometimes follow their lead on stock picks and investment suggestions. I'll check out their recommendations and see if they conform to my own style and risk tolerance. For example, only last week I was reading about a stock from someone I follow, a well-known investor / fund manager, who wrote a short article about a particular down-and-out stock. I checked it out that afternoon, and would you believe the stock was up 50% on that day. Now, that's a big rise, 50%. But that didn't stop me from being more curious, because even after that move, there may still be a lot more value left for others to join in and profit from. Well, I did have a good look, and I thought, yes, there is a lot to profit from. So I immediately bought some. At least within 15 minutes, I had bought some for my portfolio, and I intend to buy more this afternoon when the US stock market opens. So some people might think that's a little bit crazy. How can you even think about buying something that's already up 50% in a day? Well, if it's gone down multiples of that in terms of price, a 50% rise up is not really a great deal. Let's say a stock's gone down from 100 to 20. For it to return to 40, it's got to go up 100%. So if it's up 50% and it's at 30 from that 20 level, it could go back up to 100. Could. There is always that potential. So you have to look at it in the context of where it's come from and where it could go to. And in this instance, I think the price movement, well, I view that price movement as a catalyst for revaluation. A 50% move is huge, especially in a day. So something significant has changed. The market is looking to revalue that stock. That's how I view it. And if I were to wait any longer, I could miss the whole revaluation move to higher prices. So my view is, how would I feel about missing that opportunity? I'd hate it. If the value is too attractive and the returns may be in multiples of the amount risked, then my view is, don't wait. The logical thing is to get some and maybe add more to it. I guess the point is, if you know that something's really cheap, there's been a catalyst for revaluation, the price is signaling to you that this is the point at which everything's pivoting, you have to go for it. After all, if you've done the research, you've followed it, and you don't pull the trigger, you're wasting your time. You have to follow your process, which is why you need to be confident about your whole process. And anyway, in terms of trying to get in on an investment like that, I think George Soros used to say that when you're sure, be greedy like a pig, because there won't be many opportunities when you can do so. Maybe you'll wait months or years for the next big investment like that to come along. And at some stage, you have to make a decision. So if in this case, it seems like there's quite a lot to put together, and whether that's my experience giving me an edge, I don't know that I have that edge in terms of the returns. Let's see. It'll be borne out over the next 6 to 12 months. I think that if there is that edge, then the edge comes from following patterns of behavior, knowing when to strike, being comfortable with volatility, because remember, volatility tends to indicate confusion over price. Volatility for me, as long as it's not an illiquid market, there's confusion over what the price should be. So it's kind of like a price discovery mechanism. And that's really where opportunity lies. So you have to look at these volatile markets to see, okay, why is it volatile? What price should it be? Can we work it out? And if so, can we profit from it? And the edge also comes from understanding your risk and obviously keeping your head. Okay, next question. If someone were to ask me for coaching, would I be open to that idea? Yes, in fact, that's something I'm currently looking at. I'm starting to put something together based on the principles in my book. It's for all investors as a coaching course, a discussion forum to air views, ideas and thoughts, and help people improve their own investing style. I mean, for me, coaching is the ultimate tool in assisting all the greats, from athletes and sportsmen, and those that rely on mind management to keep them focused. I mean, I received coaching to set up my podcast from Brian Rose and the team at London Real, and I couldn't have done it without them. I managed to learn how to make a podcast, publish a podcast, do all the things around it that make it better than everything, most 90% of all the others that are out there, in an 8-week period. They taught me, and without them, I wouldn't have had a chance. So they teach, we learn, we repeat, we hold ourselves accountable, and we enjoy. And not only that, the bonus is I've also made friends with people from around the globe as well. And how much did that cost me? It cost me a few thousand dollars, but I'm getting something that is hard to put a value on it. For me, it's hard to put a price on it because the value, you don't know what's going to come from the podcast. I'm probably going to get to meet lots of different people I never would have met, get to talk to people about something that I'm really passionate about. And I think that's a great thing. If I pay a few thousand dollars for a one-to-one coaching course and somebody else won't because they think it's too expensive, they can't see what they're going to get. It's a different view of value. So I view that as money well spent. And that's what I think about coaching. Coaching really is money well spent. If it's something that you think that you want to do and want to do it well, why don't you ask some of the best people who can do it well? They know how to do it well. They've done the whole process many times. They've had the pitfalls. They've failed, and they can tell you what to do and what not to do, what to watch out for and what to be careful with. All these things, you get a head start. So for me, paying out a few thousand dollars for an intensive, and what some people might think expensive, but yet not, is, I think I've got great value from it. I don't understand that mentality. They would probably happily spend tens of thousands of dollars for a university course that takes years then probably we won't land them with a job at the end of it. Which I think is silly. I mean, coaching costs a fraction of that, and it's more focused. It's more of a tool for learning. There's a guy in Lebanon called Saif Din Amous. He is an Austrian economics professor, and he teaches online courses. He also wrote the book called The Bitcoin Standard as well, which is a great book if you have a chance to read it. He offers his students courses from starting in the hundreds of dollars, I believe, rather than the thousands, because he says, why do you go to university? The money goes for the administration, the bureaucracy, and paying for the upkeep of the buildings. In the age of the internet, do we actually need that? Probably not. So I think it's wise to remember that price is what you pay and value is what you get. And on that note, I think it's a good way to bring to an end the discussion today. I thank myself for my time. And if people are interested in getting to know more about my podcast and coaching, please go to the 55 East Revelations podcast or email me directly on nigel@55eastfx.com. And if you want to know more about what I do, please go to www.linktr.ee/55east. And lastly, for those interested in the Investing on the Shoulders of Giants book, it can be found online at barnesandnoble.com. Until the next time, thanks for listening.